Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, Broadway actress Saycon Simbla is here to chat about starring in the new own series, Delilah, which debuted this past Tuesday. Gospel music sensation Rudy Currents is here to give us a little inspiration and talk about his Billboard hit, I Belong Here. And closing out the show is my exclusive with filmmaker Phil Branch. He's here to chat about his new class, Race, Gender, and Wardrobe Malfunctions on Janet Jackson and Media. I'll also be playing Janet Jackson classics all throughout the show, but first, here's Reva Blue with this week's entertainment buzz.
People magazine is reporting that comedic actor Tracy Morgan wants to play icon Louis Armstrong in a biopic. According to Morgan's Coming to America co-star, Jermaine Fowler, the former SNL star, showed him a clip of a movie that he's financing and claims that Morgan sounds and looks exactly like Armstrong. Tracy Morgan also told late-night talk show host Conan O'Brien during 2019 that he wanted to play the What a Wonderful World singer. Our lives run parallel, said Tracy to Conan. I really believe that it is a beautiful world. With all the scams and judgery and broken dreams, it's still a beautiful place to be. Upfront, we'll keep posted on the status of this project. In other related news, congratulations goes out to Regina King, Andra Day, Daniel Kaluuya, and Dominique Fishback. They will be recognized as this year's annual AAFCA Awards presented by the African American Film Critics Association. The virtual event will take place on Wednesday, April 7th, and celebrates the best in Black film and television. The winners include the cast of One Night in Miami, Disney's Pixar's Soul, and Rada Blank's 40-year-old version. Go to WCLK.com to see the full list of winners. That's this week's Entertainment Buzz. I'm Reva Blue.
This is Omar Dorsey, a.k.a. Hollywood of Queen Sugar, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My first segment features Broadway star and singer Saycon Simbla. The Tony-nominated actress is back on prime time in the new own series, Delilah. The one-hour drama comes from the creators of the popular series Greenleaf and also stars Mara Hill and Jill Marie Jones. Saycon was excited to chat with me about her new role and the opportunity to be reunited with the show's executive producer, Charles Randolph Wright. The two previously worked together on Broadway in Motown the Musical, where Saycon portrayed pop icon Martha Reeves. Check out a portion of our conversation.
Oh man, Delilah. Delilah is a show, it's starring Mara Hill, who plays the title character Delilah, alongside the character Tamara, who's played by Jill Marie. And I'm just like so thrilled to be a part of this show. Basically, these two women, they're lawyers who went to school together. One has like her own smaller mom and pop type of firm. And then the other works for this big, huge mega firm. And they're both based in Charlotte, North Carolina. And my character, I went to school with them. I'm not a lawyer, but I come in and I'm coming in with a few questions and I'm really wanting Delilah to take on my case. The fact that these two women are best friends, they went to school together, I went to school with them, and they have some very specific opinions about my character, Leah Davis. And Leah comes back in town with some questions and she's needing help. People are watching her, chasing her, and she feels like she needs some help. And so she comes to Delilah with a big issue at hand. So yeah, that's how I fit in the series, playing Leah Davis.
And what I love about this is that you have these two powerful African-American women who are lawyers, you know, working in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is giving some shine, you know, to the South. And just love the fact that they are so strong and so powerful. And this is, again, I think a conversation that we've had over the last couple of years now about strong Black female images on television. So how does it feel to be, because you were also part of the Scandal series as well, which also featured strong African-American women. So how does it feel to be on this series with these strong Black women?
You know, it's really exciting. I've been so fortunate to be a part of shows like that. You know, I've also been on shows where I was the only Black woman. And it's a different dynamic sometimes. First of all, people are people. So everybody loves, everybody hates, everybody, you know, everybody has the same range of emotions, no matter whether they're Black, white, Asian, Latino, whatever, everybody has different feelings. But when you are on a show where there are other people who have things in common with you in terms of your culture, it's so relaxing in a way, because you don't, there's a shorthand that you speak. You don't have to explain, you know, if you ask somebody, hey, do you have some hair oil? You don't have to explain to them why you asked for hair oil, you know? And I really appreciate that, you know, the hair and makeup department, shout out to them, were so, so wonderful and accommodating. They have what you need. You don't sit down feeling really nervous, because yes, in this day and age, you still, as a Black actress, they wonder why you're tired in the morning, and it's because you may have spent the night grooming yourself and preparing yourself, because you know that when you get to set on certain shows, they may not have what you need to make you shine, or have what you had to make yourself look good for the audition. So that was really exciting. Because we were filming during this time of the pandemic, we weren't able to hang out as much as we would have liked. We also had a lot of wonderful Black female directors. We have a Black female DP, you know, which is just wonderful to be on set and witness that. And it was interesting to see the interaction of people who are used to seeing men in certain positions, you know. And I will definitely, you know, of course, shout out to Oprah Winfrey Network and Oprah Winfrey, and that she knows the importance of people having those opportunities. And our executive producer, Charles Randolph Wright, really just giving that opportunity to those women. And he also directed several episodes as well. And I just always enjoy his touch. I just enjoy how he comes in the room, you know. And we all were functioning in such careful ways with dealing with the pandemic. And it was just a blast.
Catch Saycon Simbla and Delilah on Tuesday evenings at 9 p.m. on the Oprah Winfrey Network, and go to WCLK.com to watch the full interview, where she also talks about starring in the reboot of The Wonder Years.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Life Lux Jazz Experience, November 4th through the 8th, 2021, in Los Cabos, Mexico. Performers include Eric Roberson, Mesa, Mike Phillips, Hiroshima, and is hosted by Mark Curry. There will also be health and wellness activities and a sunset cruise. Information is available at LifeLuxJazz.com.
There is a place for me, there is a place for me, there is a place for me in the body of Christ. Yes, there is a place for me, there is a place for me, there is a place for me in the body of Christ.
And I belong here.
Hi, this is Cece Winans, and you're listening to Upfront, hosted by Ray Cornelius.
My next segment features gospel music sensation Rudy Currents. The award-winning singer and songwriter is enjoying a moment on the gospel Billboard charts with his inspirational anthem, I Belong Here. He's also teamed up with hip-hop star David Banner for another single, Hashtag Hope, which was used this past weekend at the All-Star Game and has become a new anthem for the Black Lives Matter movement. I caught up with Rudy this week to chat about his success and why he considers his music a bridge between the races.
I wrote I Belong Here several years ago. It initially started as
an affirmation to myself, just a reminder. You know, I've been doing this music thing for a while, and sometimes we can get so lost in our hustle that we forget how significant and what an impact we are making. My father's a pastor, so I grew up playing and singing in church. I've experienced church hurt. And so, you know, sometimes you just feel like, you know, because people have disappointed you that, you know, maybe what you're doing is not making a difference. And so I Belong Here was birthed out of, you know, just the idea that, you know, what God gave me is significant, and what I'm doing still has relevance. Fast forward to 2020 and we fell into this global pandemic, did not realize that when we released the song that it would take on a bigger meaning, a more universal revelation kind of came out of the song, because so many people were experiencing hurt from, you know, being isolated, losing loved ones, not being able to celebrate loved ones. I've lost two aunts during the pandemic, not COVID related, but COVID impacted, because we couldn't come together and celebrate them the way we normally would. People are experiencing financial hardship, anxiety, depression, suicide, contemplating, you know, different things that they're going through. And they all now need the same reminder that you have a special place in this world, that your life has purpose, and that you belong here because you're loved. So I'm just grateful, even more so than the number one Billboard, you know, achievement two consecutive weeks in a row, but even more than that, just to have such a timely message.
Yeah. I hope to see tomorrow. I hope it's better than today. I hope my brothers and sisters won't have to live being afraid. Yeah, I hope that mothers and fathers will live to see the day they don't have to bury their children.
Let's get into your latest single, which is titled, let me make sure I'm saying this correctly, Hope, that also features Atlanta-based rapper, hip-hop star, television personality, as well as actor David Banner. What was it like working with him? And this also kind of has a Black Lives Matter theme, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the song is titled Hashtag Hope. David Banner, I'm so grateful that he got on the remix. So during this pandemic, we released actually four singles and multiple videos. So because we did several videos for I Belong Here, but we started with I Belong Here. Then we released Hashtag Hope, the remix. And then finally a Christmas single, Oh Holy Night, featuring Korean artist Jay Jin. Also, a little fun fact about me, people don't know that I kind of was raised around civil rights activism. My godfather, who is now deceased, his name is Jim Wells, and he's a part of civil rights history. He was a member of the Friendship Nine. It was nine Friendship College Black male students who staged a sit-in in my hometown, Rock Hill, South Carolina. And so that was that made national news at the time. And so this song just kind of really continues that theme. It's sad to say that in 2020, we're still dealing with police brutality, and we're still trying to deconstruct systemic racism, and that's really what Hashtag Hope is about. Also, you know, one of my personal goals is, you know, as a Black man, but also just as a person in this community, is to heal people through music. And so I was inspired by the Eric Garner case that happened several years ago when he said, I can't breathe. And then to be alive in 2020 and see George Floyd be murdered in the streets and say the same fatal words, I can't breathe. I was convicted and felt the need and compelled to release this song.
Rudy, are these songs attached to an album? And if so, is this album out, or is it coming out? When are we going to get more music from you?
The album is coming. It's titled Stained Glass Windows, the forthcoming album. It's titled Stained Glass Windows. The song that will be on the album is I Belong Here. Hashtag Hope is kind of a standalone moment that I think that we should continue. And also, speaking of Hashtag Hope, big shouts to the NBA All-Stars and NBA on TNT and David Banner. They gave us an opportunity, and the song was featured in the opening ceremony / festivity. So but the album coming is Stained Glass Windows. It'll be out this year, 2021. And I'm so grateful for the songs. I think that, you know, I feel like I'm called to be a bridge between a lot of different communities. Faith-based, Sunday mornings can be very segregated within America. So I feel like I'm a bridge between Black and white and Asian and Hispanic audiences. But then also I want to be a bridge between, you know, spiritual and not so spiritual audiences as well, and show people that what I'm offering is relatable to everybody, because everybody needs to be loved. So I'm really excited about the album Stained Glass Windows.
Congratulations, Rudy, on all of your success. As I mentioned at the top of the segment, you know, being a Billboard chart-topping musician is no easy feat, and you have had so much success with these amazing songs, I Belong Here, as well as Hashtag Hope, and we wish you nothing but more success in 2021. How can our listeners stay in contact with you on social media?
Well, first of all, Ray, I want to say thank you so much for having me on the show. It really means a lot to all of your listeners. Thank you for the love and support. If you would like to support me, please follow me online. You can sign up for my email list at my website, rudycurrents.com. You can also follow me on social media. It's at Rudy Currents. That's at RudyCurrence. I'm on Instagram. Twitter is at Rudy_Currents. I'm on YouTube. Watch the videos. Hashtag Hope. I Belong Here. I promise it will bless you. Make sure you add those songs to your playlist, download them, stream them, tell a friend to tell a friend. And also we'll have apparel, faith-based apparel available very soon as well. So stay connected to me and I will keep you all posted.
Watch the full unedited interview with Rudy Currents at WCLK.com.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
You just heard pop music icon Janet Jackson performing alongside Justin Timberlake in the now infamous 2004 Super Bowl halftime performance. The two were singing his song, Rock Your Body, when Timberlake attempted to remove a piece of Jackson's leather bustier and somehow remove the entire thing, exposing her breast on national television. The wardrobe malfunction derailed Jackson's longstanding career and ultimately led to low album sales, canceled TV and film projects, and she was banned from attending the 2004 Grammy Awards. Timberlake's career eventually skyrocketed, and he went on to become one of the biggest stars of the mid-2000s. The performance has become the subject of a new college class titled Race, Gender, and Wardrobe Malfunctions on Janet Jackson and Media. And here to talk about it is the creator, filmmaker, and pop culture expert, Phil Branch.
I'm a professor at Goucher College, and we have this opportunity to create courses that deal with issues that go across disciplines, whether it be business, sociology, art. And they asked if I had an idea for a class. And the first thing that came to mind is also my favorite artist is Janet, right? So I thought, oh, I would love to spend 13 weeks talking about Janet Jackson and thinking about it in sort of the broader sort of sociological terms, some of the business terms, what's, you know, what was her impact? And then taking a step further, like what was sort of the impact of her work on the industry, right? And on people. And so I put that together. And oddly, the first response was, you know, our students won't get Janet possibly because they were so young, which I know, but we teach them Shakespeare. They weren't around for Shakespeare either, right? So my thought is we just catch them up like we do with every other dead white person that we teach in college, right? We just catch them up, right? So certainly we can catch up with Janet, but she's still current, you know? So, and it turned out students were interested. The class filled really quickly. And we're talking now about sort of all these issues. And the one thing about the class that I love is that I'm actually introducing Janet to students who know, they know who she is, but they had not really fully understand. They didn't fully understand what her impact was on the industry.
And this class, basically, you're using her career as a case study to examine how race, gender, and politics play a role in how media is created, marketed, and and basically consumed. And what I think is so interesting is, you know, Janet's career, we've seen it's had its ebbs and flows. And I think we've seen her go from this massive iconic musician to struggling, you know, to sell albums. And for those of us that grew up in that time when she, you know, it was her, Whitney Houston and Madonna, it's just like, why is this album, you know, not selling well? So Phil, if we can, let's talk about this curriculum, kind of go through it, if you will.
All right. So one of the first things is to, you know, it's something you said is sort of one of the first things we talked about in class was let's situate what Black crossover music is, right? If we're talking about Janet Jackson, we're talking about Lionel Richie in that era. We're talking about Patti LaBelle's switching from her soul music to sort of New Attitude era. What does it mean to be a pop artist and be Black in the 80s, right? So I'm situating sort of like not just how famous she became or how impactful she became, but what did a Black artist have to do in order to be seen at that level when we were still segregating radio stations. You would win a Black award at the Grammys, a Black award at the American Music Awards, where we were still separating everybody. So the first thing is a historical approach. you know, not going back to the 1800s, but let's just go back to the 80s and look at how music was being packaged and sold, right? And I think what that does is set up for Janet, when you see Black artists were often asked to strip down who they were in order to kind of reach this mass audience. And what you see with Janet Jackson and her third album, Control, is that she's not stripping down. She's actually keeping that level of funk, R&B in the music, and it worked. And it worked really, really well. And it becomes a bit of a blueprint for Black artists to kind of keep who they are in the music and still promote that to the mainstream public, because that hadn't been what was, that wasn't what was happening. You take Lionel Richie from the Commodores, and then you tell him to smooth out the voice, smooth out the tempos, whatever, and it works, right? Make it more poppy. There's nothing wrong with that. But that whole machine was asking Black artists to be less, right? And then you have Janet, with the help of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and everybody else involved, saying, well, let's just be, right? And it worked. Right. And then we see that trend kind of continue. So it starts with that historical context, not just that Control was a hit, but the environment in which it became a hit. Right. In a segregated environment, a segregated music environment, even in videos, which, you know. Right. And then we move from there to talk about the work, because I didn't want to just jump right into Justin Timberlake, although he interrupted my syllabus by apologizing. So we had to skip a few weeks and talk about that apology. So he messed up my syllabus, but we were happy. This is life. So we move forward, but, you know, talk about who, you know, who situate her historically, and then talk about the work, talk about what the work meant, and then look at the layers, like, okay, so who controls image, who controls voice, who controlled, let's talk about how bodies are viewed. Let's talk about how voice is viewed, and then situate her against a Madonna or a Whitney and start to really examine how all of these figures kind of played into each other and kind of locate who's actually in control, right? Janet's in control of her music, but who's in control of the music industry, right? So when we start looking through a lens, let's talk about it honestly, right? And it's hard. I'm at a predominantly white institution at this point. I'm at Goucher College. And for students, you know, I'm teaching them that it's okay to look at sort of race dynamics and not take everything personally. So it's okay to say white men ran the music industry and understand that I am not saying, or no one in class is saying, all white men would do this thing to Janet Jackson or to any other artist, right? And it's also a learning process for them to be able to talk about delicate issues. So it's been good to use something that's fun, like Janet, and to kind of talk about those hard-hitting issues.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting too, and as you're talking about Control, I had this conversation also with another guest on the show for today, Saycon Sembla, who I had mentioned, actress and star of the new series, Delilah. She talked about watching Janet really take control of her career and her imagery. You know, she was like, she was 20 something years old when she came out with the Control album, and she was all covered. You know, she had the black turtleneck. She was, you know, wearing the suits that, you know, but it wasn't until she, basically got into her mid 30s that she was like, okay, now I want to be sexy. Now I want to show my body. And she said she thought that was really interesting, because most of the singers that were in their 20s were showing the skin, when she was like, no, that's not what I want to do right now. Yeah. But when I want to show you that, I will. And she eventually did that. And so she loved the fact and respected the fact that she, when she said she was in control, she truly was in control of her imagery, when she wanted to be sexy, when she didn't want to be sexy, when she wanted to be serious. You know, Rhythm Nation was all about social empowerment. That was her time that, listen, I want to speak about who I am as a person, not just as a pop music performer, but as a Black woman living in the United States.
Right. And I think what's significant about that is that it wasn't just her taking control. It was her taking control in the face of sort of racist ideology that says you have to be this in order to sell records, right? So you go from Control, which is, you know, a major hit. And then they want her to make an album, from what I've done in my research, something that they wanted to call Scandal, like a follow-up to Control that just kind of hit on the same things and talked about family. And I'm even more in control, right? That kind of thing. And she didn't want to do a sequel to Control, and she did Rhythm Nation. And according to all the articles I've read and the research, the label thought, we missed an opportunity here, because this could have just been a dance pop heavy album and you would have just sold more records. And then here comes Rhythm Nation and breaks every record in 1990. Like, she wins every Billboard award. It's the top selling album. But from what I understand, they wanted New Agenda to be the first single she wanted with Chuck D, which she's talking about being a Black woman. Yeah. So you have to think about who Janet Jackson has to be at the height of her career at that point, saying, I want to release an album that's uplifting Black women as my first single off of Rhythm Nation. And in an article I read, Chuck D actually told her when the label said, I don't know about that, we should go a different direction. He actually said to her, I think the label might be right, but I love this song. Like, listen to them on this, right? Because you want to be able to keep having these messages, and you don't want them to say, well, you did this, so you can't do this anymore. So you have a 23-year-old woman at the peak of their career, ready to jump out, you know? So it's not just control of the music, it's really in control of, like, I have something to say.
What has been the response from your students with this class? Because I remember talking offline, this class was being offered as well as a Beyonce Lemonade class. So what has been the response to this particular class?
The response to this class has been surprising for me, sort of to see students wake up and become aware of something that they thought they knew about and realize they didn't, right? So my students would be somewhere between 19 and 20. You know, they were young when this happened. They know some of it, but they grew up with Janet Jackson as this sort of myth icon, but they didn't really know all of her songs, a lot of them. But they know Justin Timberlake because he's sort of been in the, when they were kids, he was coming up, right? So they grew up with him on TV, in movies, on the radio, doing the whole thing. And so it's been interesting to watch these young men and women read articles, go back and investigate, and then go, wow, like, how was this able to happen? How was he able to behave this way, say these things, and be as misogynistic as he was, and have this full career and never take any blame? So I'm seeing this whole kind of awakening happening where they're starting to question, like, so who makes that choice, right? You know, I showed them a clip from the 2008 ESPY Awards where Justin is making fun of the Janet wardrobe, you know, incident to a whole audience of people laughing and having a good time about it. But he's using it as a stepping stone. And they were just so disgusted by it because in their minds, it was an incident. He apologized, she apologized, but because she's a woman, she took a little bit more blame. And what they're seeing is like, oh, it wasn't that simple. It was an entire industry, mostly male, worked together to continue to uphold his career and left her in the dust. That's why I started with the historical context. So they were like, we didn't know she sold this many records. We didn't know she did all this stuff. And then they get to where Justin is doing what he's doing. They're just like, wow, they were even able to erase this Black woman who was at the peak, right? So what does that mean for anybody else? So watching them be able to rethink their own attachment to sort of their idea of what the incident was about. And even Justin Timberlake, I think he lost a lot of fans in my class. I have no problems with that. And I'm not pushing that. I'm just saying, here's the facts. Here's what happened. What do you think? And it's nice to see them read and come to class, or, you know, we're meeting asynchronously. So they record these videos for me where they kind of process what they're reading. It's been nice to watch their videos where they just kind of think through, like, so what does this mean for me as a woman professionally? What does this mean for me as a white man? What is my responsibility in the career when I go into the professional world to listen and to be mindful? So it's been nice.
Bill Branch, thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront. Again, we're talking about his new class on Janet Jackson. And let me make sure I get the title correctly here. Race, Gender, and Wardrobe Malfunctions on Janet Jackson in Media. Phil, how can our listeners stay in contact with you on social media?
So the website for the class is janetclass.com. And if you go there, you'll see all my social media links and my contact. But you can just find me at Phil Branch with two L's, P-H-I-L-L Branch, at Twitter. My website is philbranch.com, and you can find all my information there. And you can watch the class. So what I'm doing is I'm doing the class on campus, and then I'm also doing a modified version where I do these podcasts, video podcasts, where you can follow along on the syllabus. And the syllabus is posted on the website, janetclass.com.
All right. Thank you so much, Phil, and best of luck to you for the rest of the semester.
Yes, that's time to grade some papers.
Watch the full conversation with Phil Branch at WCLK.com. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Saycon Sembla, Rudy Currens, and Phil Branch. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront Inside the Entertainment Industry.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.